Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I got a. This is kind of a bad time. And my respect and condolences go out to the San Jose chapter. And sorry, this is a shitty thing to happen to Jethro. This is the way I feel about what should be done and what goes on. And it seems like we're never going to get along. Never. Check this out.
Is it the flow? That's the body. Is it the flow? That's the body. Is it the...
Thank you.
I do. I'll be sure to pass that along, Art. And I'm typing right now, but it's like, I don't know. What do I say? Where do I begin? You know, everything's supposed to be. We're all supposed to be united here. There is no such thing as unity sometimes. I got some unwanted guests right now. They're trying to jump in here real quick. I gotta do a little maneuvering here. I'm gonna play this song goes out to all the brothers. 81 especially. And when you guys hear this song, it's called Forever Angel by Axel Rudy Pell. I got somebody trying to bump in here, and if everybody can hear it, it's okay. Let me know, because last time they did it, I lost sound. So if you guys can hear me real well, just type it in the chat for me while I play this song. I'm going to try and I got to put up a couple of firewalls. Yeah, I mean, that song goes out from the bottom of my heart, man. Anybody that rides, hangs with the brothers, knows the deal. This is another one. This is this one's called Silent Angel. Be right back. I got two more things to do and then I'll be right back. I'm sure you're right about that. It's anniversaries. We don't need any more anniversaries, man. We need birthday parties, and we need people to be around. And as for the cops, they're the biggest gang out there, man. It's just like in California, man. You guys know about the Step Act. They can, they see three of us standing on a corner. Some guy decides to say that, hey, Sarge, man, I think we need to investigate those guys. That's how it starts. And then they apply for grants and all kinds of bullshit to fucking do that shit. Last week, Oceanside, they're doing motorcycle-only checkpoints. Tomorrow's the last day. 7 days of bullshit. But, I got something I wanted to talk about on a lighter note. Let me get to it real quick. Bad part is, well, actually, Bill's out on the road, man. He's driving, he's going to Arizona, he's coming around the horn, he's going to end up in Las Vegas for Bike Fest. He's taking Kathy on, it's probably going to be your last ride, he said. And then, trying to get to, here we go. Okay, Sunday, we got the Final Options having their biker breakfast at Sweetwater Harley Davidson. Starts at 8 o'clock. And then on the 8th of October, we're going to have the San Diego Hot Rod and Custom Bike Show. Proceeds are going to go to the Diabetes Foundation. And then, on Saturday, October 15th, we're going to have the Save the Boobies Breast Cancer Benefit. And then, we're going to have the Barry and Carol Sandberg Memorial Ride. That's Sunday, November 6th. Just all kinds of events, man. Let's see. And then on my blog today, I was really excited when I got home because went over 41,281 hits today before it reset itself at 4 o'clock. For the last 10 days, we've gotten 394,409 hits. So I must be doing something right. Just found out I got a cousin in Ireland. MC, man, if you want to call in, and Art's listening, he's at work. I don't know if he can call in, but if you want to call in and talk about what you wrote in there before, that's cool. What you sent me in a message, not what you wrote in the chat room. But, Baker should be calling in here shortly. I know he was going to be finishing up a job, and then he's going to call on his way home or when he got home. Yeah, it's like my topics, everything is shot to shit with all the stuff that happened over the weekend. And then all the, like, Papa's anniversary, you know. And I don't know. I don't know what to say. Baker was going to call in with some updates. And I guess Betsy was supposed to call. On my Okay, here we go. There's something that happened a while ago, and a traffic stop doesn't void the Fourth Amendment protection. Yeah, I'm trying to keep these guys out and do this at the same time. But in 2007, they tried to pull this kid over for faulty taillights. He didn't stop until he reached his parents' home. Parked in his driveway, he quickly ran in the house. Deputy requested backup and then pounded on the door of the home. Father opened the door and a police revolver pointed at his head along with shouted demands and dropped to his knees. The wife peered at the door and asked if she had a warrant. She was hurt. The response was a blast of pepper spray to her face. But she was able to call 911 as the police entered her home, so the gun still drawn. The kid was arrested as his parents, who were charged in obstructing justice. The parents sued the police, citing illegal entry, excessive force, and false arrest. Police countered that they had qualified immunity from prosecution because their actions were justified while chasing a suspect over taillights. But the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals, where the three-judge panel found law enforcement forced and warrantless entry into the home to hunt down a fleeing driver from a traffic stop was not justified, as it might be for certain felony cases. The appellate court found that the parents could sue the police who lost their qualified immunity when they conducted an illegal search and seizure. The judge's ruling concluded that no reasonable officer would have thought pursuit of a minor for a mere misdemeanor traffic offense constituted a sort of agency permitted entry into the home without a warrant. They wrote in the statement in this article that about recent court rulings that weaken the Fourth Amendment protections. So there's pressure to redefine our rights. Several media outlets requested and received permission to publish the newsletter. With that backdrop, it's especially important to report a story in which one nation's higher court upheld the strict principles of the Fourth Amendment, reproduced in its simple but elegant language here. And this is how it goes. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable search and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue, but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched, and the persons or things to be seized. So, there we go. All over a traffic stop. I mean, when I get pulled over and they want to look at my saddlebags, I tell them no, not without a warrant. Well, you got nothing to hide. Well, if I got nothing to hide, you need a warrant to see it. End of story. Right after that, I tell them, am I under arrest? No, you're not. Then am I free to go? That's when the fun starts. Sometimes it's crazy, man. Whatever happens out there. But, we need something a little upbeat. I know what I'm going to play. Play this song. Like I said, I'm waiting for Baker to call in. I'm going to try and call him while I play this song. Here we go. This one's appropriate. It's called, this one's by Golden Earring, called Going to the Run.
That's for Eddie. Oh, man, he run.
Mm-hmm. Phil, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you good.
All right, good.
What's happening to you?
There's a shitload happening, as you well know, so...
Exactly.
Trying to sort some stuff out, but this is an ongoing dialogue, so I'm not looking to...
No, we don't have to. We don't rehash, because people know what's going on. Anybody who listens to the show knows what's going on and where I'm at, where I'm coming from.
Okay, and we're also in a delay, aren't we? It sounds like.
Like 10 seconds, maybe, but...
Yeah, okay.
It's okay, because this is the last bastion of freedom. You can say anything you want here. If you feel the need to say, hey, fuck this or whatever, you can say whatever words you want to say, brother.
All right, well, that's cool. That's good to know. And in my dealings with... in public, I always tend to try to not intermix, profanity in it, but sometimes it's you can't find a better word for it. Exactly.
That usually gets your point across.
Right. So I guess if it's okay.
Sure.
I just wanted to pitch a couple of organizations that I guess that are all sort of on the same page along with us, although they may not necessarily be represented on this show. It's probably a good thing to visit them and probably bring them up from time to time, because behind the scenes, a lot of these organizations play big roles in trying to make things better for all motorcyclists throughout the country, and in particular here in California, just as Bikers of Less Tolerance, who I have a lot of admiration and respect for.
And I happen to be a member of that.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Yeah, I was, I'd heard of your last summit and heard a lot of good things about it. So, so if I could, let me make a plug here for one of the motorcycle rights organizations here in California, called the Modified Motorcycle Association of California, or MMA, not to be confused with the mixed martial arts, which it is quite frequently, depending on who you're talking to.
Exactly.
But it is.
Some people get it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said some people get it and some don't.
Yeah, and that's okay. As long as it rings a bell, we'll take association play any day, right? But anyway, the organization MMA has been around. It is since 73, I believe, and it's the oldest motorcycle rights organization in the country. Started here in California, as you know. Won't go into the sordid past, but today was re-energized recently in the last couple of years. So we have about 17, 18 divisions here in California, and looking to start one also in San Jose pretty soon. Basically, we meet monthly at various locations. Some locations are in motorcycle clubhouses, and some are in more neutral locations, such as VFWs or American Legion posts. And we get together every single month and discuss what's going on in legislation, what's going on in terms of local issues, what's going on within the clubs themselves. And talk about legalities of civil actions, and starting to pick up the mantle on pushing back. It's been a lot of talk in the last year or so since I've been involved, but now it's really beginning to take the form of clubs actually hiring lawyers and PIs and stuff, and returning fire over the bows of law enforcement in various towns that have really come down hard in terms of civil rights violations and harassment of motorcycle clubs. And just to say that the MMA is not a club, a motorcycle club organization just for motorcycle clubs. They are about motorcycle rights altogether, and definitely endorse the rights of any club, no matter, you know, mixed type or gender, doesn't make a difference. Independence, all are welcome, because everybody has the same issues, and
that's the thing people don't understand. You know, you can get 10 guys, and 10 guys will stand there and swear to God they'll be there, and out of those 10, you might get two.
That's true, and as you pointed out earlier in the program, with your brief discussion about the California STEP law, it only takes the look of a couple of folks and the look of organization to trigger what law enforcement might construe as a criminal type of event waiting to happen. So, and you're
true.
Right.
You know, I'm going to tell you a true story.
Okay.
I could go downtown right now, and I could go to the same place where I always go. I park my bike in front of one bar. I walk down and get a cup of coffee. On the way down there, I don't see one cop. I could be down there 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then I got three or four deep in the parking lot, three or four guys walking around just because I showed up by myself. By myself. I got pulled over the other day because they thought I was somebody else.
And that happens quite frequently. As a matter of fact, I can share my own story because I'm assistant division manager for the MMA meetings that we have in Frisco and San Mateo County, as well as being liaison to the Alameda County area. before a meeting in Frisco about a month back, someone riding a motorcycle apparently had brandished a gun, and there were, word went out, and I think this was close to the university out there because university police were involved. But anyway, there were a couple of members of MMA, not members of a club necessarily, that were on their way to the MMA meeting that were stopped. And the only reason was is because they were riding a motorcycle. And they were quickly, you know, patted down and read the Riot Act and very close to having their rights violated on all fronts.
I mean, it's like I switch off. I have three different helmets I wear. And only because I play the game with them now. Like, sometimes I'll wear my full face with a dark shield. And I was wearing that the other day when a guy pulled me over and he said, "Hey, I'd like to see your face." Or he said, "I want to see your face." So he thought he told me to take off my helmet. So I opened the front of it. And he goes, "What are you, a wise guy?" And I said, "You said you wanted to see my face. You did not say take off the helmet." "Oh, we're going to be a smartass about this." I said, "No, I did what you said. You wanted to see my face. There's my face."
Well, and is it lawful for a police officer to be able to ask you to remove your helmet or just to verify that the picture on your license is in fact you?
That's it. But he already knew who I was. He was behind me for a while, so they already knew who I was. I ride a black Dyna, and I'm the only guy that I know in California that rides around with a one-pound ball-peen hammer on top of his saddlebag, who's told that I need to put it in the saddlebag, and I said, "No, I don't have to. As long as it's zip-tied to the top, I can carry it that way." And he goes,
right.
"Well, you know, that might be a felony, you carrying it." I said, "No, if my name was on it, that makes it personal, then it's a felony."
Well, that's an interesting point, because I will say that based on other accounts of members within MMA and the motorcycle community, that during pullovers, during routine traffic stops, where either it's legitimate or whether it's a ruse actually to pull club members over upon
right.
interrogation of what they may have on them, they'll usually turn that around and use that to file weapons charges. I mean, taking common work tools to whip keychains, not the big biker, the old school biker whips with the big metal clips, but the ones that hang off of belt loops.
The ones that people clip on their mirror or their brake lever or whatever, those are a felony
right.
now.
Yes. Most definitely.
I had a guy down in front of Bill's shop selling those, and I walked on over and I told him, and he got pissed off because people heard me talking to him and they had just bought them and they wanted their money back and he wouldn't give it to them. So needless to say, he's never allowed to come back to that event.
Yeah, I've known others who had just basically taken the large metal clip off. And whenever anybody asks them, it's just an ornament versus a biker whip. But
exactly.
I guess that's how you sort of spin those these days. But anyway, countless.
The first thing they'll ask me, "Where are you going?" "Point A." "What? Point A. Where are you coming from?" "Point B." "So you're not going to tell me anything?" "I don't have to tell you where I'm going." And then when I get one that gets real crazy, I go, "This is America. Last I knew, I didn't need a permit to travel."
Yeah. We try to at least tell ourselves to make it, make the conversation even more simplistic. It's, we have to ask the officer to articulate the reason behind the detention.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're going to leave. Or I'm leaving. I mean, it's pretty straightforward because you know that they will use every tactic that they've been trained for or earned through experience to get folks to talk in any shape or form and divulge information, not only on themselves, but on anybody else that might be associated with in the club community. So it is a matter of education that we're trying to work with our community as well as with leaders like in Bolt to help with presentations and trades to get the word out, because all the information, no matter how abstract, is useful to law enforcement these days, particularly in the age of technology and business intelligent-like tools that are used in the fusion centers. And I'm sure you guys have discussed fusion centers on the show, correct?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. So all this information really goes in, no matter how abstract, as I mentioned, or how small, goes in collectively into law enforcement databases that get filtered to a fusion center. And they're all sort of pieced together, little bits and pieces of a large puzzle from individuals to connections to larger organizations. So there's definitely a lot here in California that needs to be, you know, examined much more closely and worked towards in terms of legislation and awareness, so that people are more familiar with what's going on in these underneath the auspices of Homeland Security. It's not just the motorcycle community that's affected, right? It's anybody who really speaks out against any
regulatory. They're listening right now. They're listening right now.
Oh, absolutely.
I got a little box here that lights up when they try and get in.
What, through your firewalls?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, understandable. It's really interesting because only now, I was just talking to a relative of mine, unrelated to motorcycling, but, you know, when we talk about, you know, freedoms, it isn't just, you know, the freedom to ride, which is obviously, you know, a primary concern to us motorcycle community, but any infringement of any constitutional right is really sort of a core concern with us in organizations such as MMA and my other organization, Motorcycle Clubs and Nuts Street Gang. It's all the suppression of our personal liberties. And the point I was trying to bring up was I saw on RT, which is a independent news organization on the internet, they finally covered Newswire, the issues in New York City where, you know, police obviously were abusing a lot of the demonstrators out there. And so with that type of a situation out there, those things are also, you know, that denial of First Amendment rights and Fourth Amendment and Second Amendment, which I see across your blog all the time, are of issues that need to be discussed among organizations like us and try to work through those in terms of what can be done in working with other rights organizations as well as taking action on our own. So, you know, I haven't looked in your blog, in your thing here to see if there's any questions.
Yeah, if you got anything you want to post or anything like that, because I don't know if you heard me earlier, but today we just went over 41,281 hits.
So I guess one of my questions was, I must be doing something right. Yeah, and it is. Actually, quite honestly, I will look to your blog for sources of intelligence that, you know, I pick and take with me to MMA meetings for discussion. Because more information, I'd rather have more information and bore the crap out of folks that are listening than to not discuss these vital issues at all. I mean,
yeah.
It's really important to get out.
There's one in there that says traffic stops don't void your Fourth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
There's I put in there, there's one about open carry in California.
Right.
All kinds of stuff is in there, man.
Well, those... Yeah, well, if we just briefly talk a moment about open carry. So, what was it, 414? I can't remember the bill off the top of my head, but that one passed the Senate, and that was to, you know, extend heavy fines and imprisonment time on anybody openly carrying their weapon as we can today in the state of California.
Right.
That,
yeah, they grabbed me one night, seven of them, and they decided to take that. They took my 45. They took my hammer. They took my helmet, and they took my knife. And when I went to court, they weren't. I ticked around with the city for like 3.5 months. I'd send them in a public service request, policy, procedure, all that. The lady would go on the internet, send me shit that wasn't right. I'd send it back. No, that's not right. You need to tell me. Did you know whatever question she asked me, I answered with a question. And then finally, when I got to go to court, I had seven of them standing to my right, and the judge asked each one of them individually, "Are you ready to proceed?" "No, Your Honor, not at this time." He said, in the case of justice, I'm going to dismiss this. And he said to me, "Mr. Hennigan, is there anything else I can do for you today before I pass, everything goes away today?" I said, "Yes, I'd like a writ so I can get all my stuff back." And they fucked me around for 2 weeks trying to get it back.
Yeah.
But I beat him on that one, and I beat him on, so far, I lost one and I won six.
Are you in California or Nevada?
No, I'm in Oceanside.
Oh, okay.
California.
So there's there seems to be some confusion around dismissal charges, and I would assume that that can differ from county to county. Are you aware of any dismissal charges that are applied mostly through the counties in California? Excuse me.
No, it's like you said, it's from county to county, because what happens, like, okay, in L.A., case in point, in L.A., with the red light cameras, they don't mm-hmm. they don't come after you, they don't stop your license, they don't, you know, they don't send a collection agency if you're nothing, because some people up there think they're unjust. Down here in San Diego, I was sitting in court, and I listened to somebody ask that question, well, how come it's okay up there, but it's not here? And the commissioner said, because we're Southern California and we do things different here. And he charged the guy $500 plus court costs.
Wow. Okay.
You know, it's just like on my blog there. This is the Oceanside Code on weapons possession in public prohibited. And mm-hmm. and what it is they wrote it so there's no way around it. No person shall appear in any street, alley, sidewalk, parkway, or public place, or place open to public view while carrying upon his person or having in his immediate possession any dangerous or deadly weapon. This section shall not be construed to duplicate prohibitions of California state statute or to prohibit the possession of weapons expressly authorized by California state statute. So basically, when they came out with this, the knife laws in California is illegal, because they came out with it July 1st of this year. It depends on where you're at. Like LA, LA is totally different. It can't be no longer than 2 inches, and all kind. You can't have it on 2.5 inches on a school ground. Possession of a fixed blade with a blade longer than 2 inches, and you know some of the people that we know carry the big hog leg. Some places they're legal to carry. Some places when they pull them over, they'll take it and they'll put it off to the side and tell them they can get it after they leave because it's legal. But it depends on where you're at.
Exactly. And that's probably probably the hardest to keep track of.
Because right here, in black and white, I'll repost this again for tomorrow, but it says, also when certain municipalities have their own laws that may affect the legality of carrying a knife. In Los Angeles, for example, it's illegal to openly carry any knife with a blade longer than 3 inches.
It's also my understanding that
there's a guy Arden, I know down here. His name is Pastor Z. You might have heard of him. You might have met him. But the guys made him a cross, and they used a sword. So the top of the sword where the handle would be was a cross. And he rides a three-wheeler, and they gave him a sheath, and he had it hanging off the back of the bike, you know, stranded straight up. And our buddies over here pulled him over and told him if he didn't take it back and put it back in the church and lock it up, they were going to arrest him for a felony. And he's an ordained minister. and it was a religious artifact.
Yeah, it just goes to show you that law enforcement will, you know, in under their self-defense rules, will pretty much look at anything as being a weapon and charging you something. Heck, you can take your keys and make it a weapon, or pull your pen out. That can be construed as a weapon. I'm waiting for them to start to pull that crap out.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like I try to tell these guys when they ask me about that stuff. You know, hey man, well, is this knife legal? Well, according to, if it's like mine, or I tell them, hey, you can get this one like I got. It's a Gerber. I said, I went down when I bought this, and I showed it to them, and they told me it was legal. And I got the business card of the lieutenant who told me it was legal. So if there's any problem, I'll flip out the guy's card. I have no problem doing that.
Well, also, you know, when I make a determine whether to wear my knife or knives on my own person when I ride to is really dependent on how much pressure the local and gang task force apply here locally, and here in San Mateo County is pretty bad, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about.
So some of us don't even...
It just depends where you're at.
Exactly. So getting back to the open carry issue, it was, I found the number, it was Assembly Bill 144.
Uh-huh.
And the Assemblyman Anthony Portantino out of the 44th District
uh-huh.
got this bill all the way through the Senate earlier this month, and it's awaiting for, it's on Jerry Brown's desk now as we speak. So basically, if he does not veto this bill, it's going to make it a misdemeanor, now punishable by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, to openly carry an unloaded handgun on one's person or in a vehicle, and make
right.
it a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in county jail and a $1,000 fine to openly carry an possess unlawful handgun and ammunition in a public and incorporated city. So basically, does that mean that if you go to a gun shop, how do you transport it if you can't carry it openly from the store to your vehicle or from your vehicle to your house? I mean, it's unimaginable what this is really saying here.
Yeah. It's like, what do you do? You know, if you're dumb enough to walk in and say, hey, can I carry this? What do you think's going to happen? They're going to lay you for walking into a public building with a gun, even though it's unloaded. I mean, Oceanside, down here, they had a guy pull a guy over on the sidewalk. The guy grabs the .45. He on the video, he says he's a retired Marine, but he doesn't know how to check a .45, and he's got it pointed at the guy, and the guy's gun was loaded. So I talked to a sergeant a couple weeks ago, and he told me they just had a class for all those guys to explain to them on what to do and how to do it, and that being that new law is on the governor's desk.
Hmm. Yeah, another interesting thing I found out, since we're still talking about firearms here, that there was a letter from the ATF to all federal firearms licensees, that basically declaring all medical marijuana patients fall under unlawful user of addicted to a controlled substance, regardless of state laws, and are prohibited from possessing a firearm.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, what do we do, Matt? It gets crazy.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it's like, I told him one time, a couple months ago, I told a guy, I said, hey, you know, it's not 1973, man. Whatever they taught you in the academy now, it's outdated. You know?
Yeah, I mean.
Well, those guys are a criminal organization. Those guys are this. Those guys are that. I said, dude, to me, it's not. It doesn't sound like you know what you're talking about. You're just listening to the media, and what you think you heard, that's your interpretation.
Now, are you referring to those stops made on motorcycle?
Yeah.
The motorcycle community, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of what police hear of in the training and information that they get come from the International Outlaw Motorcycle Gang Investigative Agency, or Association, rather. I did a little follow-up on that organization a little while ago, and it turns out, I thought, they were some independent group of law enforcement officers made this sort of their life's calling. But apparently they operate in the same office as the FBI and ATF down in San Diego, in fact.
Uh-huh. Yes, they do.
So, basically, they do is they link information about clubs from pretty much all law enforcement agencies across the U.S., and I guess this is sort of the primary collective source of information, database, if you want to call it, for motorcycle clubs and their association to the larger clubs who, as you know, are already basically classified by the Office of Homeland Security as
terrorist organizations.
Terrorist organizations, right? Criminal enterprises and prevented from leaving the country. I mean, right up there with the mafia and the Chinese Tang and everyone else. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. You know, it's like... somebody said it best when he said, "We're not a criminal organization. We're just organized criminals."
Well, as you point out almost every week, that if you want to take a look at acts themselves and statistics around convictions and publicized acts, you'll find more happening in the world of law enforcement than you do in clubs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, anybody here, if they're wearing any kind of support gear, any kind, even a baseball hat, it's like they jump on them. Anybody riding a black Dyna, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have a little fairing on mine, but mine's all black. And usually I get one or two guys that from the east side of town that I haven't met yet. And that's fun starts about the hammer.
What the? Oh, your Ballpy Manor or the?
Yeah, my Ballpy.
Okay. Okay.
Well, I didn't know you could carry that. Oh, yeah. Not a felony. No. I said, no. If my name was on it, that would make it personal, and then it's a felony. After they're all grabbing it, got their fingers all over it. I've never touched it with my bare hands. There's more cop fingerprints on that thing than any tool I own.
I'm sorry, Phil. Did you say if you had your name on it, it would become a felony?
Yeah.
I guess.
He makes it personal.
I see.
That's in the statute.
Okay. That's good to know.
Hmm?
Note to self, do not etch your name into any of your work tools.
It's just like if you're a carpenter and you throw your tool belt in the back seat and you happen to have a claw hammer within arm's reach, that's a felony. But if it's locked in the trunk, it's not.
But you can carry it out on the open on your bike.
I do. 17 years ago, the highway patrol stopped me and told me it wasn't zip-tied. And they told me if I zip-tied it to the top of the bag and it wasn't illegal to carry it. put it in a saddlebag and I got stopped and they looked at my saddlebags, it would be considered a concealed weapon. I went through that on my way up to a party up north, and the highway patrol pulled me and another guy over, and only because they saw the red support gear sticking out the back of our jackets. And when he pulled us over, he walked up and he looked down at the hammer and he goes, "You need to put that in a saddlebag." I said, "No, I'm not putting it in a saddlebag. It's staying right where it is," because the guys down south said, "As long as it's zip tied to the top of the bag, I can carry it that way." He goes, "Well, I'm telling you up here, it's different." I said, "Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not moving the hammer." And then he proceeded to grab it, and he tried to take it off, but he couldn't get it off. So he told me to put it inside, and I said, "I'm not putting it inside." So 10 minutes of hemming and hawing, he finally just said, "Hey, you know what, fuck it." And he wasn't going to give us the ticket and I beat the ticket anyway, but he said he wasn't going to give us the ticket until I started not listening to him. So I told him, "Well, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. Just let me take it. Am I free to go after that?" But it happened to be a club party, and they were up in the air and all over the place at each exit and everything else. So when we got off the freeway, they just pulled up behind us. Because I was waiting. We pulled over to wait for a guy from the Sons of Anarchy that was going to a party with us. So he's up watching us get the tickets and then met us at the next exit.
Yeah, well, that's obviously some good information also. There's a lot of things about carrying standard tools that I'm not aware about. So
mm-hmm.
It gave me more food for thought.
Yeah. I mean, you don't know if you're going to ask.
No, that's true. So are those stated under the California Penal Code?
Yeah, back in the olden days, they used to have it was a tool, and I forget the name of it. But what I'll do is, if you send me an email to my email address, I'll send you the thing. But they make those lead hammers.
Yes.
That's it's under that statute. I can't think of the number, but damn.
That's okay. It makes for a good follow up, because like you said, it's good information. And
you got me thinking now, because now I'm like, damn, where did I put that?
Well, I mean, there's so many things, you know, when you get on your bike. You know, you have your standard, you know, check this, check that. Do I have all this? Do I have that? I mean, one doesn't normally always have to think about, gee, am I in possession of what could be construed as a weapon in this county? What about the other county I'm riding to? What about the following county? You know, it's just.
Yeah, because I have some friends, very, very close and dear friends, that run up and down the coast. And 2 weeks ago, the one kid asked me straight out, "Hey, is this legal to carry here?" And I gave him one that is legal to carry, because they took. He had one. It was 2.5 inches, and had a logo on it from up north, from that club. And he had it in his pocket, but he had the clip showing. But he had his shirt over it, right? When he was sitting on the bike, and the guy moved the shirt and said, "Oh, that's a concealed weapon." So they arrested him for that, carrying a concealed weapon.
And that's,
you know, all it was,
because
it was more of a knickknack than it was a functioning tool.
Well, and that's the other thing that folks have to, you know, be aware of, or be, you know, cognizant of as they're riding along. And if they're carrying, you know, one of the solid knives on their belt, which is legal, if it happens to be tucked underneath a vest or a sweatshirt or whatever, it is considered as a concealed weapon, and you can get charged for that. In fact, I know of an individual recently that was charged with that, along with some gang charges thrown on him as well, which later got dropped. But still, it shows that they will that's the first thing that they check for, because once they have some probable cause and they use that as sort of a...
They take it to the nth degree.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, not to let the cat out of the bag, but they got him for that. They put a gang enhancement on it and a couple other things. And I hooked him up with an attorney friend of mine who does a lot of stuff, and he helps me out with a lot of pro bono stuff. But I told him about it, and he had already challenged, because he's got an investigator who went out and checked on the two guys that pulled his kid over and found out that there's a lot of stuff in their jackets. And what I try to tell people is, even if the guy's nice to you, you want to bust balls, fill out an IA complaint anyway.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because it goes, it's just like it goes in their personnel file and it stays there.
Yeah, and if you use the Freedom of Information Act, then it's a matter that has to be investigated.
Yeah, Freedom of Information Act or a public service request, which they have 10
mm-hmm.
days to answer. If they don't answer you, you can after 10 days, you can file one with the FBI. If they don't answer you, you send one to the, you can file one with the Department of Justice under police misconduct, and I guarantee you somebody will call you or come and see you.
Yeah, very powerful tools and processes that we certainly don't take advantage of often.
No, I mean, I got people telling me all the time, yeah, man, that fucker, he did this and he did that. And I say, all right, here. So, and I have him. I carry him in my saddlebag. I have a little, if you know Art, the next time you see Art, ask him. He'll tell you, I got like 4 inches of stuff in my saddlebag, and it's all in files. And people say, you know, hey, I just got pulled over for this or that or bullshit. Okay, I hand them the paper. I said, fill this out right now. Give it to me, and I'll deliver it. I'll turn it in for you. Or you're going to turn it in, make a copy of it, give them the copy you want them to have, but give them the other copy, ask for the guy's business card, and have them date stamp it. And that's when your 10 days starts.
Right. So as far as, you know, all of these forms and information, is some of this information available on, say, the Guerrilla Lawfare site as well for folks to
yeah.
and access? So I'm giving you guys a plug, too, there.
That's okay.
Wealth of information there.
Yes, there is. In fact, what I'll do is I'll put those up in the chat room right now.
Good. And I think,
have you seen the new one that came out today?
No.
Okay. This came from Mr. Breeze out of Washington. He said, where Washington won that, they got that motorcycle profiling bill passed. But this easily could happen in Washington, too. Same issues, same illegal enforcement, same unethical prosecution, same dismissal, same. And this is going on in Vegas right now. Motorcyclists sue over enforcement of Nevada's helmet law. This was published today, Tuesday, September 27th at 4:31 p.m.
Oh, okay.
12 motorcycle riders filed a class action lawsuit Tuesday against Clark County and 5 cities within the county, charging arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement of Nevada's helmet law. The suit filed in U.S. District Court names it defendants the county and the cities of Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, Henderson, Mesquite, and Boulder City. It is certified as a class. The suit could represent more than 40,000 motorcycle riders in the county. The suit filed by Las Vegas attorney Travis Barrick, I'll give him a plug. He's a nice guy, by the way. Charges defendants through their agents have an ongoing pattern of practice of issuing helmet tickets to class members that are not supported by constitutionally sufficient probable cause, thereby violating the civil rights of class members. This violates the Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution on reasonable search and seizure. The lawsuit says the suit also alleges violations against the 14th Amendment protections against arbitrary and discriminatory enforcement, charging the defendants through their agents have an ongoing pattern and practice of dismissing helmet tickets when contested in the courts or appealed to the courts, thereby denying the class members their due process rights to challenge enforcement of the Nevada helmet law. The suit also alleges there's a disparity in fines and fees for helmet law violations with no rational basis for the disparities, and that the helmet law is enforced as a pretext for invading the liberties and civil rights of the class members. Barrick wasn't available to elaborate on the allegations, and the defendants have not yet responded to the lawsuit. So this, they've been trying to repeal Nevada's for since 1972. But that just came out today.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw a link, I believe, for it on Facebook, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I got one right here. I'll put it in the chat room, too. This will take you right to... Yeah, it doesn't take the media's word for this article, is what's in this article. Listen to what the Nevada prosecutor said, and I put the YouTube link up in there where this guy says it.
Okay.
And then it's let me get to the guerrilla lawfare thing here. But yeah, so what, like, you know Mark Temple?
Yes.
Yeah, he just sent me an email too about the same thing.
Yeah, what I think is things I've been following coming out of your group very closely is the California district remapping.
Yeah.
Taking a look at, the new district lines, as well as those legislators that are in those. Interestingly enough, because there are a couple of new districts and the way they're remapped, some legislators might even ride outside their district lines nowadays. I don't know what exactly that means, but all good information, important information going into elections next year in trying to determine opportunities, I guess, for helping motorcycle-friendly politicians get into office and help work towards a majority.
Yeah. So, I mean, like right now, I got an email from, I don't know if you know Don, John Delfano.
No.
You know him?
No, I do not.
He's down here with Bait 6 in San Diego. But Doug Finley is the guy that's down here. He's got RideToRepeal.com. I'll put his link up. He's got some good information, too. But what he does is they go and they check out the candidates and which ones are friendly and which ones aren't. And we have four down here so far. But I'm going to put the link in there for the Citizen Commission final district maps. It'll tell you where you're at in California and what's changed in your district. I'll put that link in there for you right now.
Yeah, I have the links from the remapping commission as well as one, I think, was it Brad Davis?
Yeah.
Had posted as well, which actually not only provides information on who's in those districts, whose legislators are in those districts, but actually has some pretty interesting and data, some analysis where it's possible for each one as well. So it's going to be very interesting. I know Doug has got his hands full right now, redoing much of his maps and analysis and his colorations on his website. So the thing I would say for all those listeners out there, it's Repeal Machine, a very informative site. And of which I also have adopted within my own strategy framework for motorcycle and street gangs, because traditionally motorcycle rights organizations spend great deal of their time lobbying the current legislation, which, you know, here in the state of California is, you know, mostly Democratic and I guess can be construed as legislation ninnies who just aren't going to change no matter what.
No.
So, you know, one of the new out-of-the-box things is I know that it's worked in Virginia, where Doug has come from, just, you know, with the amount of energy better spent in looking at the campaign trail as a mechanism to make change, since it is the politicians who actually, in effect, make the laws which the courts and law enforcement agency interpret and apply.
Right.
So,
it's just like when you go, like when you go to, you know, like I was talking about San Bernardino. I went up there with a guy. And he beat his tickets up there, and he came down. He was down here 2 weeks later to go to Cordon Vista, and he told he brought that up that, hey, in San Bernardino, I was found not guilty of this. He said, well, that's San Bernardino. We're our own entity here. And he didn't, at that point, he should have objected, but he didn't. He didn't know what to, he froze. He didn't know what to do. And at the point where I couldn't go up and tell him what to say or how to do it, and he ended up being found guilty.
Hmm.
But I got a, if you got a minute, I got a short video here that it talks about, it's a press conference in Sacramento talking about the redistricting.
Yes, go for it.
The guy's name is Mike Ward. He's shuffling some papers right now, but he's going to start talking here.
All right.
Before I take your question, I'll read a brief statement, and then I'll be happy to entertain your question. Today is a sad day for me. When I volunteered for this commission more than a year ago, I knew it would require hard work and sacrifices by every member of the commission. I believe that each of us had the best of intentions when we agreed to ignore our jobs and our families and serve the state. However, after 8 months of neglecting my patients and spending time away from loved ones, I believe that my sacrifice has largely been for naught. The Citizens Redistricting Commission has certified maps that are fundamentally flawed as a result of a tainted political process. Like a majority of Californians, I believe that Propositions 11 and 20 were necessary to clean up our politics and end the practice of partisan and special interest gerrymandering. But this commission simply traded the partisan backroom gerrymandering by the legislator for partisan backroom gerrymandering by average citizens. This commission broke the law. This commission failed to draw maps in an open and transparent process. This commission made decisions based on political motives. First, I believe that the Citizens Redistricting Commission broke the law. Nowhere is this more apparent than with the commission's failure to follow the Voting Rights Act. The state constitution is explicit in this mandate. But in Los Angeles County, the commission did not consistently apply the Voting Rights Act in drawing congressional districts. Secondly, this commission became the citizens' smoke-filled room, where average citizen commissioners engaged in dinner table deals and partisan gerrymandering, the very problems that this commission was supposed to prevent. Throughout this 8-month process, as a member of this commission, I had the sense that decisions were being made outside of the public's view. I felt that I couldn't get answers to questions or an explanation for the rationale for drawing some boundaries in certain ways. This problem was made worse by our failure to produce our promise of 3 sets of draft maps with 3 rounds of public input. In the end, only 1 draft was released, and that single official draft map lacked any VRA review. The commission chose not to release any other drafts, but simply relied on visualizations. This failure to produce appropriate draft maps affected the public comment. It tilted the public comments in favor of some groups and then failed to adequately give other groups the chance to voice their concerns with the final maps. This commission also failed on the openness and transparency front when it failed to adopt an in-process review, a system to check the checker, to validate that information was accurate, forthright, and correct. In one instance, I found that mapping consultants had incorrectly represented the public's comments. The consultants were responsible for summarizing the public comments into reports that identified the main themes of public testimony. These summaries were then used as justification to draw districts. As an example, a June 30th report claimed that a main theme was keeping Rossmore with Long Beach. I knew this was incorrect based on a complete and thorough review of the public testimony, which was overwhelmingly in favor of keeping Rossmore with Orange County. Without any kind of in-process review, it's difficult to determine how many other comments were misrepresented. In some cases, commissioners took it upon themselves to draw districts outside of an open meeting. In one case, a group of commissioners met with mappers outside of the public view. without the input of our Voting Rights Act attorneys and created visualizations for the Voting Rights Act protected districts that were later presented to the commission. Finally, I believe this commission made decisions based on political motives. This problem largely stems from the vague requirement to draw lines around local communities of interest, a term that I have come to realize is endlessly broad and easy to manipulate. This commission routinely neglected city and county borders in favor of communities of interest, which it interpreted as anything and everything from traffic and joblessness to air pollution and ethnicity. As a result, this commission never had a consistent rationale for drawing districts. For example, joblessness was raised as community of interest in multiple cases, but the commission was inconsistent in its application. Around LAX and the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, jobs were a sufficient primary reason to bind communities into a district. However, the commission split the Silicon Valley's Golden Triangle despite public testimony stating that one out of every four of the region's private sector jobs are based in that area. At a July 8th hearing, a commissioner said, "You just have so many different COIs going on that I honestly could not come up with a way to nest." I believe this vagueness allowed for political motives to creep into the commission's decision-making. It meant that Southgate was connected to the Port of Los Angeles based on the vague communities of interest of traffic and pollution, as though the other neighborhoods outside of a narrow corridor around the port are unaffected by these concerns. The commission also became vague and capricious in its compliance with nesting. Propositions 11 and 20 demanded that, where practicable, two assembly districts be placed into a single state senate district. The commission failed miserably on this mandate. Only three out of the 40 state districts are nested. In place of nesting, the commission adopted what it termed blending. However, the commission never adopted a criteria or standard for what this really means or how and when to apply it. Finally, I just want to close by reinforcing how far off course this commission came. Instead of fixing the redistricting process the politicians had so corrupted, we ended up doing the same thing. 10 years ago, there was a Ribbon of Shame district, and now we have a new one. This time, the Ribbon of Shame district is a Los Angeles-based coastal congressional district, held together by a tiny strip of land near LAX. At the Senate level, there's the Orange County hook, reaching out from Cal Poly Pomona and grabbing Cypress, Stanton, and La Palma. At a June 29th meeting, several of my colleagues agreed that their maps were something that might look strange to the naked eye, as they tried to create a district that was ultimately dismissed by commission lawyers. In the July 8th hearing, another colleague described maps for San Diego County as, quote, an opportunity to be really artistic. As a small business operator and healthcare provider, I'm directly impacted by California's governance. My family, friends, patients, and indeed all Californians were excited by this commission because we all believed it might clean up California politics. Sadly, I believe the maps certified by this commission have failed to achieve that objective.
Mike, I follow you with two questions. One is, you mentioned dinner table deals and partisan gerrymandering. Do you mean dinner table deals struck by commissioners with commissioners or with other parties that were meeting with commissioners on the outside? And secondly, my second question, maybe you can answer them both, is whether you will either be part of or will support any challenge to these maps in terms of a referendum or lawsuit.
Sure. You know, I think that my comment stands on its own. Just being a part, an intimate part of this process for 8 months, you get a sense for things. When you live it and breathe it, start to understand how things work. And I think my statement stands on its own in that regard. As far as any opposition to the maps, I have no part of that, no desire to be. I absolutely will not be participating in redistricting events that are contrary to the commission.
That's it. Somebody finally told the truth.
Well, I'll tell you, I myself have attempted to contact the California Citizens Redistricting Commission on several occasions, and I just never got a call back. So I wrote to them, you know, please be respectful and responsible to us U.S. residents that try to contact you using various channels of communications. There are questions, comments, and concerns that you need to respond to. Please return our calls and emails. And up to this point, I still haven't heard one word from them.
Have you sent him a public service request?
I have not.
So you might want to do that. You might want to do that and send one to I forget the name of that reporter in L.A. He works for the Los Angeles Times. The hell is his name? Pat something. I'll find it. I'll post it on the blog. But, yeah, send him a copy of it that you, you know, tell him the story. Send him a copy of it that you sent that in and, you know, and then you want to... You want to wait for the follow-up, and if you don't hear anything, can I contact you, and would you be interested in doing the story on this? I'm sure it'll bite.
Sure, I don't have a problem with that. Got lots of stuff on the plate, as on my plate, I'm sure you do as well.
And like, the same thing with... you know, like, if you go to the COC meetings?
Yeah, I try to rotate to as many of them as I can. I've been to 4 of the 7 thus far in the state of California.
And what's the reaction? I'm just curious. What's the reaction you get up there?
Well, you know, it's... You have to bear in mind, you know, the mindset. There are, you know, old-timers, old, you know, traditionalists, and you have the newer clubs and the younger set. And, you know, sort of the idea of, you know, instituting some political type of process into trying to get things done is not an easy sell.
No.
Been trying to introduce it slowly over time as sort of, hey, you know, everybody's sort of, you know, things are changing all around us. I mean, look at your phones. Everybody's using these new, smart, sophisticated phones and using social networking tools like Facebook and others as a means of communication. Well, with all of those are, you know, inherent... exposures to privacy and everything else, and so this is no different. I mean, we can't operate, as you pointed out, like it was the 60s, 70s, and 80s. We have to look at new ways of achieving the end game, and this is why Doug's repeal mission just resonated so greatly with me, because it makes all the perfect sense in the world. Instead of banging your head trying to lobby with politicians that won't come within arm's reach of a motorcycle club and putting their own political careers and agendas on the line, you weed them out and you look for opportunities in tight races in the primaries and you get them out of there and you put in more progressive visionary leaders in there that think the same way and definitely support our constitutional rights, and those are the folks that you develop a relationship and work with over time. It's not, you know, a silver bullet by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, change is very, very slow, and politically, political change is even slower than that. I mean, look how long it took the Native American Indians to get their, you know, and it's not even whole by any stretch of the imagination, what, 300 years? So it's not going to happen overnight, but it is definitely well worth the effort. And considering the amount of the numbers of bikers within the motorcycle community that actually step up and take action directly on things such as, you know, political legislative matters and lobbying.
Yeah, because, you know, if they, like, okay, in Australia, you know what's going on there. Canada, you know what's going on there. Mm-hmm. The only thing that really stops them right now from doing all that shit in America is the Bill of Rights.
Yeah, exactly. Except, you know, one question. So why we have to institute, you know, constitutional state constitutions and other laws to protect what is so obviously in place there, right? It's like having to draw multiple lines in the sand just to protect what we were, you know, provided by our the founding fathers. So it's a constant battle just to retain what we but we should have anyway.
Yeah, it's just like when we talk, you know, when we talk about our rights and all that in Michigan. You know, this past 6 months, they have a machine where if they pull you over, they'll download your phone. They don't need your permission. The ACLU stopped it, but it's just like if you go and you buy a new phone and you're not phone literate and you don't know how to download your phone to your so save everything on your phone, and so you take the SIM card out and put it in your other phone. Most people will take it to the store. Well, that little machine that they hook it up to download everything is the same one that the cops use in Michigan.
Right, and I've heard of that, yeah.
And I saw some stuff on California somewhere. I can't remember where, but somebody said something about trying to do that here, but it got defeated right away. But it's coming.
Well,
I mean, when I go anywhere, I take the battery out of my phone. I don't need to be tracked, and I don't need to be followed.
Well, the one thing to bear in mind on these new phones, and I'm no expert by any means, is that the level of sophistication. There are, you know, operating systems or miniature operating systems that run on these, like you would on your own computer. And there are a lot of background processes that continue to run regardless of whether or not you're in fact using, you know, one of the many thousands of applications, you know, that you would for shopping or looking up, you know, restaurant menus or flight itineraries, et cetera. There are things that are constantly running in the background, and if you don't know what these processes are, they could be pretty much doing anything, monitoring and tracking. And who knows really how far this Office of Homeland Security will go in terms of monitoring and tracking suspected members of what they classify as motorcycle gangs, right?
Right.
You
know,
you
it's
hear
like,
constantly.
It's like this, you know, to me, the greatest revenge is to accomplish what others say you cannot do.
So on that note, just one other, Bill, since we're running out of time here, so let me just stop and say if you got other callers on, you might, you know, want to call them on, because I suspect I'll be coming on from time to time and catching up on things. But if you don't have anyone else, one of the other legislative
you can matters, talk as long as you want, man.
Okay, so there is Senate Bill 914, which was introduced by Senator Leno, which passed, actually. It's around portable electronic devices and the requirements for law enforcement. It requires law enforcement officers to have a search warrant. Bold move by a legislator with some balls, finally, push back and say, hey, it's not right that officers can remove and interrogate your phone just on, you know, traffic stops or whenever they feel like it. They have to have a warrant. Again, it's one of those situations where we need to enact laws in order to protect what we should have protected anyway by our constitutional rights. But in this case, it's on Governor Brown's desk as well as the open carry bill and several others. And there's another one also that I just found out about releasing information on the types of books, I guess, that individuals purchase download-wise or through the stores. I mean, it's just amazing that every facet of our lives needs to be covered by some law to protect, I guess, really the bottom line.
Right. And you know, I learned a long time ago. My dad told me this when I was a kid. You deserve what you tolerate.
Yeah, not to get into any conspiracy-related discussions at this point here, but, you know, it's a scary thought of when, I guess this was the third time, I think Congress just sort of came up with a deal, the government, the lights on. That whole scare a couple of months back when the government was on the verge of defaulting, et cetera, et cetera. and potentially what ramifications that may have. And then you sort of continue to look at everything and all the planning that's been put in place over many, many years by the government in the different forms, up into including the Office of Homeland Security. So I guess it sort of scares me to think what would happen in the event that, the United States government called some national emergency and declared martial law. I guess all bets will be off after that, right?
Exactly, because, I'm waiting for that to happen, man. It's happening all over, everywhere else. It's going to happen here soon. It's going to happen here soon. If we get 4 more years of Obama, I guarantee it's going to happen.
Well, it's not just, Obama. I mean, you know full well that some of the biggest challenges to the Constitution and the way of wildlife here in the United States is the UN itself.
Uh-huh.
Working with those behind closed doors, putting together treaties that affect, things such as the global harmonization of manufacturing standards, which can affect, all of our motorcycles, the way they're designed going forward. That SB 439 is going to go into law January of 2013, which will prohibit modifications to motorcycles for 2013 models and higher. So, that's just one thing that's done. And, of course, they're big opponents of guns and always working to conspire to institute, not policies, but agreements, I guess, for lack of, I can't remember, with the United States for disarming U.S. citizens. So we got a lot of challenges on all fronts around us. So,
It's just like the Chinese did after the Korean War. They had everybody bring in their guns.
Yeah.
Nobody has guns.
I could tell you, I'm not going to voluntarily do that.
Exactly. I mean, I it's like Charlton Heston said, they can pry it from my dead cold hands.
Exactly.
Mhm.
So what? Let me throw a question out to you, and because this is a question that I'm teeing up and looking to take around to the Confederation of Clubs and MMA. Are what are some of the important matters and issues that we should be concentrating on for the 2013 as we sort of look to the fourth quarter of this year and looking to put sort of plans and strategies and agendas in place for the following year?
Well, for me, it would be, you brought up the exhaust bill and mm-hmm. what's going on with that. I can't see, and you have to picture this, but I can't see rolling down the freeway for 20 miles and a highway patrol guy pulls up behind me, pulls me over because he says my exhaust is loud. And he's going to get down on his hands and knees in his nice, crisp uniform and look for a sticker.
Right.
But it's going to, I think it's going to happen. Because they don't know what year a bike is. And to me, it's just going to give them probable cause to pull you over. And if you happen to be wearing a patch or a support shirt or a color of a support shirt, you're going to get jacked up for nothing. That's their probable cause to pull you over.
So would you consider that a form of profiling, or would they be doing that with every bike?
No, it'll be profiling.
Okay. So I guess this goes back.
It's like this, okay? I'm 53 years old. I got a ponytail halfway down my back. I wear 24/7 support gear. Due to the job I have, I can't get into anything involved with the club right now. But those guys know my heart's there. It's been there for forever. And I get it now. you know, you're kind of old to be doing that. Hey, don't worry about what I'm doing. What are you doing? Why'd you stop me?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were, hey, I can, it's the last time I looked, when I enlisted in the Marine Corps and I fought for this country, I fought for the freedoms that you're trying to take away from me right now. Am I free to go? I'll sit there and debate them for 10 or 15 minutes. They have no answer. They just get fed up and hand me my shit and walk away.
Yeah,
the main
well,
thing is
that
the main thing is in the first 30 to 45 seconds, you're going to know how it's going to go. Because they're more afraid of an informed person than an uninformed person.
Well, it would also help if there's laws that prohibit them from using profiling techniques like that to pull people over without justified reason. Right, very similar to what, as you mentioned, what Washington State enacted. Although I understand they're still having some problems, but you know it's still worthy of the crusade and the effort there. So, you know, sort of going back to next year, because there's in legislation wise, there's only a handful of things going on. Right, Abate has their helmet modification. Legislation that they're looking to get through committee next year.
Right.
There's AB 1047, which is, you know, prohibiting funding of NHTSA funds specifically for motorcycle-only roadblocks. By the way, there is going to be a debate rally of sorts the state capitol early January. Going to try to fill the Assembly Transportation Committee with as many bodies as we can in support of those bills.
That's on January 12th, right, on the South Steps?
Unless they change it. I thought it was earlier. It is on a Monday. And I did get some information for that. And it'd be good to get a member of the debate actually to talk about it directly. But it is, I'll get that confirmed and get that out. I just don't have it on the tip of my tongue because I thought it was a little earlier, but you could be right.
I think I got an email on that. I got an email on that today, and I think it was the 12th.
Okay. And then there's another bill that we had, that MMA had the language authored for, but we don't have a sponsor for yet that we've been trying to shop around to various assembly people throughout the state. And it's really an amendment to the UNRU Civil Rights Act. And basically what we're looking to do there, providing we're able to find a sponsor, is to add some additional language into the Civil Rights Act itself to include the transportation. So, well, let me back up here. So everybody should understand the UNRU Civil Rights Act, again, is another level of legislative law that provides protection, you know, equal access to various groups.
Right.
We'll go through the list of all of them, but it basically covers everybody except motorcyclists, right? So our what we're trying to do, again, is add language for modes of transportation, memberships and associations in clubs, as well as the wearing of incorporated insignia. And we don't put a lot of detail there because, you know, we're not trying to make it seem like a motorcycle or a club type of beneficial change in the body of the Civil Rights Act, because when you look at, you know, modes of transportation and membership and associations and clubs, as well as, you know, incorporated insignia that people wear, it can be anybody or anything. It could be unions, right? It could be, it covers, you know, first responders, whatever, law enforcement, everybody. Because we continue to run into discrimination in certain establishments, casinos, et cetera. You might have, you know, run into that yourself because you say, okay, so.
I've had that happen down here at one of the casinos.
Right, so the basic intent here is to get all of our rights back that were sort of removed through the years with all these frivolous lawsuits and trying to get back, you know, basically baseline ourselves back with everybody else. And then move into a very similar model that the state of Washington applied, because there's a lot of, you know, good information and intelligence put together in the way they handled that, and try to find a supporter that can, you know, lobby and represent motorcycle community against the profiling of motorcycles. So I guess that's where I was going in this, in the question that I asked you, because there are some very key things that are sort of missing that hopefully we can get at to start thinking about, and that's, you know, looking to, you know, constantly go after to repeal those laws that are just, you know, attack our freedom to choose, reinstituting back our rights as we should have had them to begin with, and then prohibiting any funding or the use of profiling. And those are just, you know, just the tip of the iceberg. But they got to get done.
They do. And the sad part is everybody, you know, I can go down, I can get 10 or 15 people, you know, I'm sitting there having coffee, we're all bullshitting, and I'll bring something up and I'll get maybe 10 of the 15 will say, yeah, all right, man, I'm behind you, I'll be there, you know, and this. And then I'll start getting the phone calls. Well, my wife said I can't go, I can't do this, I got to go do that. And it's like, at some point, I don't even get frustrated anymore. I don't even get upset because I know sometimes I'm just getting lip service.
Well, and that's why it's inspiring that there are certain, again, moving back over to a conversation within the motorcycle club community, that there are some clubs in certain regions that are beginning to push back and make a concerted effort saying enough is a fuck enough.
Now they're starting to feel the heat.
Yep.
You know,
actually,
it didn't happen to me, but the first time it happens to them, man, they're going to be really pissed off.
Well, I mean, that's a surefire way of dealing with apathy, right? When the shit happens to you, then it becomes a completely another matter, right?
Exactly. And then they want to make sure that you listen to everything they got to say at that point. You know, because if they think they're going on to that fear, they're gonna keep talking and trying to make a point. And then when you say, well, you know, didn't I just talk to you about that 2 weeks ago? Didn't you tell me you were gonna come and you were gonna show up and help? And then you didn't show up. And I told you, hey, wait till what happens to you. You're gonna come and say you're all fucking pissed off and shit. And it's like, yeah, you did say that, man. Yeah, you were right.
The lowest common denominator is the individual here, and it's going to take as many individuals as we could possibly get operating on their own relationship with their assembly person or Senate in their districts as well as their vote in order to affect change. And even if it comes down to organizing a PAC run in defiance of discrimination or some police action, we all are going to have to step up. And there's always been a hesitation to privacy issues, you know, putting your name out there on a piece of paper, you know, signing some type of petition or going out there and meeting legislators or being caught in public. But it's just something that we're going to have to do. Patches or no patches, we're going to have to go out there just like the clubs did in the state of Washington. Everybody has to be together and on the same page. And I guess, you know, for a future discussion here, talk about, not today, but another day, of something that I know that USA Iron wanted to talk about, and that was the U.S. Defenders Program and the Coalition of Independent Riders, which is a mechanism for linking clubs together and standardizing communications for people that are supposed to take action on various political type of situations, whether it's writing letters, making phone calls to politicians, et cetera. So, I mean, it's not like the community doesn't have the knowledge and the wherewithal. It's a matter of, you know, galvanizing folks together on a common cause. And I think with the successes that we expect to come out of some of the clubs and their civil lawsuits against, just really bad police actions, harassment, and violations, that we can stir the troops up to take some additional actions. Because I'm sure you'll agree, you know, as big a state as California is, we have probably the longest journey to take in terms of getting everybody north to south together to march to the same tune.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's going to take some time to get it done. And all I can say is don't give up the fight.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm the same age as you, and I look back and try to look ahead and saying, say if I want my own kids to be able to enjoy their rights and freedoms as we have growing up to some degree here, and unless we do something, it's slowly going to erode and become a police state here, and I'm quite frankly, very alarmed at what's going on, and I don't mean to be an alarmist, but there's just too much at stake.
Yeah, there is. There is. And, what do we do? I'm trying to do it here. It's Art told me, yeah, it's January 9th, and it's from 12 to 3 in Sacramento.
Okay. Good deal.
It's on a Monday.
That's when they open up office hours, and I know it's bad for folks that are working, but, we can all seem to find time for special occasions. This just has to be one of those type of occasions.
It really
doesn't do any good to go up there with 200-300 people. We need 2,000 or 3,000 people to make a statement, right? We're already behind the curve because motorcyclists, you look at, I think we're like 1.2 registered motorcyclists in California. Even if you took all of those put together, we're still a very low percentage of the voter population. So
it's like this, man. If we could get 40,000 people to just go out for a ride without a helmet and get a ticket, we'd shut the court system down.
Hey, well, you heard of what France did, right? They're having their issues also with the EU trying to basically control everything that they do, from wearing reflective clothing to motorcycle standards. Well, a couple of months ago, their form of demonstration was getting 100,000 people on bikes and riding all, and basically they almost shut down the entire country. And so they started to back off.
And they just did it this weekend, too.
Yeah. Yep, it was EU hands-off bikers. It was a growing movement there. So I fully support the Motorcycle Action Group. They're like the Abate MMAs of Europe out there, and they're showing us how shit gets done.
So exactly. And that's the problem. Everybody talks the talk. Like me, I'm here, dude. I'm sitting in my house doing this, and I'm not hiding from anybody. Hiding from anybody.
Yeah, I'm with you.
If you want to call back Thursday, cool too. If you want to do a little research and get some stuff together for Thursday, that's cool too. You have my email address, don't you?
I don't think so. Go ahead and put it on the...
I'll send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, I think. Go ahead and do that, and I'll send it off. That way, if I have any time there, we'll be more specific about what to talk about. But I appreciate the time and the opportunity. I'm sort of a late bloomer in life here. I really only started doing what I'm doing in the MRO arena for the last 18 months, but it's...
Because you got tired of deserving what you tolerate.
Well, I just get tired of getting spanked and without taking any action.
Yeah.
So
if 10 people get a ticket, 9 of them are just going to pay it.
That's
true. That they don't understand that if you go to court the first time, it's only your arraignment. You plead guilty or not guilty. Depending on what you did and what the cop writes, like in Florida, they were putting smiley faces or frown faces on the ticket. Tell the judge you were an asshole or not an asshole when you got the ticket. And that was what the fines were based on. That's what your fine was based on.
Mm-hmm.
That lawyer down there challenged that. He showed the pictures to the judge and asked what's going on here, and then they sent it to the Judiciary Commission, the same thing, and now they can't do that anymore. They can't write anything on the ticket other than write. They can't make no faces. They can't make no derogatory statements. You either were nice during the stop or you were uncooperative. That's it.
So, I mean, and you can please excuse my ignorance on this matter because, honestly, unfortunately for me, I haven't been issued a ticket in quite a while. But if you refuse to sign a ticket, what are the implications there?
If you refuse to sign a ticket, you have in California, you have the right to go and see a judge immediately.
Okay. So is that what Bolt advocates?
You can regress to go see the magistrate at that point. You might go to jail overnight to go in the morning, but to prove your point, sometimes you got to eat your shit or get off the pot.
Yeah, exactly. And I know it's a tough spot for a lot of people because, you know, for those that rely on their driving record as a means, their jobs, it's a tough spot. It's a rock and a hard place. But with all that, where
they got that Homeland Security deal, and I work on the Navy base, and a lot of times, if you've had any kind of a felony, can't go on the base.
Right. Yeah, they definitely
now,
have pretty hard.
They changed all the laws this year. And the last time I went for my, I have a top secret clearance. And the last time I went and I talked to NCIS, they threw some pictures on the table and I said, so what? I went to a party. What's the problem?
Yeah, so, but it would be a little different story if you were actually a member of a motorcycle club. Do you think?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And right now, I'll tell you right now, if you've seen any of the pictures from Afghanistan and Iraq, and this message goes out, I'm not going anywhere. If we go over, that's fine. It's no big thing. But on Camp Pendleton right now, there's 72 documented gangs. If you've seen any of the pictures from Iraq and Afghanistan of the equipment or the walls or anything, you'll see MS-13, Latin Kings, Peacestone Nation, Booze Fighters, Outlaw. You'll see all that shit on the walls, painted on the walls or on the tank, on the side of the tank.
You mean members of the armed forces?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Camp Pendleton has 72 documented gangs on Camp Pendleton.
Well, that's something else for another discussion another time, right? How veterans who
I'm just letting you know that even the guys, like, when this war started, they opened the floodgates because they needed people. So a lot of people got a second chance.
Well, there's an implication there, and again, probably another conversation for another show, but how veterans, whether, you know, they came in under the radar because the government was hard up for numbers, or whether they're, you know, upright citizen Johnny next door, after they come back and they join a motorcycle club, you know, just as a mean of, you know, continuing that camaraderie and brotherhood.
Came back in Tennessee. Tennessee. He came back. He was sitting on the porch. They just gave him his patch and everything. He was going to get it before he left, but he went to Iraq. He came back. They gave it to him. The cops showed up. They said he made a move, and they shot him to death on the porch. It wasn't back one day. They killed him. They said he was reaching for a gun. Yeah, he was actually reaching for a Bud Light.
Fucking amazing. I hope they sued the crap out of him.
Yeah, it's just like that kid in Arizona. People were coming in his house, so he's standing in the doorway. 72 bullets went one way and none came back the other way, but they said he had a loaded M16 pointed at him.
Incredible.
And all he was doing was protecting his house. told his wife and kid to, he put his wife and kid in the tub.
Did we just go, we're already off the air here, right?
No, this, we can go on as long as we want. I mean, if you wanna, if you got somewhere to go, you got something to do, just call back in Thursday, about 6:15 or so.
That's great.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Appreciate the time.
No worries.
All right.
No worries. You're welcome anytime.
All right. You have a good one then, Phil.
You too, man. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. I'm going to take us out with a song here real quick. And this one is going to happen to be by Charlie Baker. This one's called Ride.